It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
All right, welcome in. Welcome back. Thanks for hanging out with us. It's the Gym Day Podcast, named after that nerd Gym Day. Look who we have here today. Obviously, I love all the Reds, but when you're a local dude and you're Cincinnati Red, we love that anymore, right, people? The pride of Northern Kentucky, Mr. Luke Maley. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm cheating the system, getting all this love and praise being the local kid, but I'll take it.
No, that is not cheating the system at all. It is a local kid done well. I mean, they're not just giving you a gift spot in Major League Baseball. You've got to earn such things. And it's tougher to stick than it is to get there. At least I think so. I have a question for you. I have many questions for you, obviously. But this team, it's probably not, like you say, oh, who's the leader of the team? They're not going to say one guy. It's going to be a few guys. But you're definitely one of those few guys. And some might say you're the guy. Now, and I mean this in the most positive way. A guy in your position, how the heck did this happen?
Maybe that's why I shy away from it so much, because I really don't know.
Yeah, you do shy away from it, but it's real. No, I'm serious. They're drawn to you. You speak with authority. You lead all the meetings, mostly. You lead the stuff on the bus, which is, you know, most of it stays on the bus. You're the guy. You lead the morning meetings, the Reds got talent, all that stuff, right? I mean, you're that guy. How did this happen?
Well, you know, I think personality, I guess, has something to do with it. But as you kind of alluded to, I mean, leadership takes many forms. I think that I've sort of found my way throughout the years, this being my, you know, I don't even know what season it is for me. But I think you kind of find your way as you go along. And accompany that with being from the area, kind of having an understanding of what the city's about, what the franchise is about. I think that's helped me as well. And then on top of everything else, we've just got a young team. And, yeah. And those guys are leaders too in their own right. But I think that when you're, you know, just based on age alone and service time alone, you're going to find yourself in those spots when you're on a team like the one that we have here. So, you know, all of that kind of culminates together, I guess.
Let me ask you this. For a long time, and rightly so, this was Joey Votto's team. And he earned it. I mean, we're talking about a National Baseball Hall of Fame caliber player in Reds uniform for such a long time. And we wish him the best. I hope great things happen with Toronto. But now that he is gone, these guys, this young team, they have to find their own way, right? You've got to naturally, organically find who the leaders are and find your identity. So in that way, can it be a positive thing?
Yeah, you can always make a positive out of any situation. It comes down to choices. We talk about that a lot here. I mean, no matter how you're playing, your base running, the controllable parts of the game, and you can name quite a few, you know, those say a lot about you, and because they're controllable, like, you can make the best of them. So when you have a situation like we have with Joe, who has been a legend, always will be a legend in this city, that hurts. It hurts not having him. We miss his presence. We miss his talent. I mean, just start with what a great player he has been and still is. But it also opens up doors for guys to step into roles that maybe weren't there the previous season. And I think we've found that already, and it's only going to grow from here.
Who are the guys in your mind that are, like, not only leading by example, but they're the ones that guys go to, that speak to outside of yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I would start with Stevenson. I think anytime you're a catcher, you have to be able to speak both languages, meaning you got to be able to talk to the pitching staff as well as be a part of an offense. You know, if you're a left fielder, for example, you may never even have any meaningful baseball conversations with a pitcher because it's just not really, it doesn't really come up. Mm-hmm. So I would start with Steve-O for those reasons, and also because he is a great leader. He cares as much about a pitching staff as any catcher I've been around. He works incredibly hard at it. And he's diplomatic. He's a great guy. You know, all of those kind of intangible attributes that you look for, he has. He's able to command a room when he needs to, and he's also able to kind of sit back and just be an absolute menace at the plate and not say something for 2 weeks at the same time. So he's a guy that comes to mind. India has been a guy for years now that has stepped into that role, and I think it's going to continue to grow with the departure of Joe. Steer, I mean, Fraley, we talk about leadership a lot, but if you just have one or two, you're probably not going to be very good in that particular department, and we have quite a few.
Yeah, absolutely. But going back to Steve-O, I love when he pulls the ball at the plate because I know his natural is the inside out, send it the other way, and he lets the ball travel. He's got a good eye at the plate in that regard. But, man, when he pulls the ball, you pull the ball, and I mean, the ball just rockets off your bat. But when he pulls the ball, he's dangerous.
Yes, he is. I mean, he's dangerous going the other way, too. I think that contact point is probably the thing that gets lost in all this because it's not really that, in my opinion, it's not that you're trying to pull the ball to do damage. I think that's a good way to get in trouble. But I think that when you're going right, your bat is whipping through the zone because you're picking up on good pitches to hit sooner. And so that bat of his, when he's really going well, just connects in the front, 8 to 10 inches in front of the plate, and it's got nowhere to go except the left field most of the time, unless it's just way outside or something. But, I think that when he pulls the ball, it's really just a byproduct of him snapping the bat through the zone and attacking good pitches to hit.
You had a good spring, man. What, anything different, or is it just, hey, man, I just had a good spring?
It just felt like I got a middle heater so often.
Really?
And it's just one of those things about baseball. People always try and say, oh, that's baseball. Well, I mean, to me, a lot of times when I've struggled, especially the last few years, because before then it was kind of self-induced. But the last couple of years, if I have a bad spell, I go back and look at at-bats, and it just feels like you're 0-2 before you know it. And one of them was dotted down and away, and the other one was a missed call. And it just seems to happen over and over and over again because just, it's a small sample size, and sometimes those things happen. And so because you don't have results during those times, it's like, oh, is it my swing? Is it this? And sometimes you just go, I don't know, man. The guy made two really good pitches, got me 0-2, and it happened over and over again. And I just need to take that because eventually I'm gonna see something to hit, and I need to be ready for it and not to panic and all that. And the flip side, I think, of what I just described happened for me in the spring. It just felt like any time I was ready for a heater, they threw it, and they threw it in the middle of the plate.
How much does it mean to you when they talk about, okay, we're going to stabilize a pitcher, and Steve-O's growing behind the plate, and he's going to be in that role going forward, we hope, for many years. But when they want to stabilize a pitcher, all right, match him up with Maley. How much does something like that mean to you?
It means a lot. I kind of tend to shy away from that as well, just a little bit, because, I think there's something to be said with game calling. I don't, apologize for that. I do think that there are some things I bring to the table with calling a game, just like a lot of catchers in the league. It's not just me. So if you're getting that feedback from a pitcher, they must have a trust. And I think that ultimately that is the biggest compliment, is the fact that I trust this guy back there. But also, there are times when pitchers want to throw to, even if it's me, they want to throw to me, and I'll just look at and be like, it's got nothing to do with me, man. If you go execute your stuff, I mean, just take Hunter Green, for example, or take Ashcraft. They could want to throw to either one of us. Not that they do, but if they did, my response would be, okay, that's great. I'm ecstatic that I get a chance to catch you guys, but it's got nothing to do with me, man. If you throw 98 down and away and you're able to mix in a slider and be unpredictable, you could pretty much have a lawn chair back there and you guys would have success.
All right, take us into the catcher's room. And without giving away, I'm not going to ask you about how you attack a certain batter or anything like that, but just in general, how much do you guys go calling a game off the scouting report? How much is feel? How much is reading a hitter maybe the first time they're up and you're facing them for the second time in the game? what all goes into calling a game, and can that rub off on a young catcher like Stevenson?
I would say it can. I know it did for me when I was with, like Russell Martin comes to mind. The first part of my career in Toronto, you know, you picked up on some sequences that were just cool. Like they were a kind of against the grain stuff that you don't normally do. And what I mean by that is like maybe like a first pitch changeup, right-handed pitcher to a right-handed hitter. It's like, oh, wow, like you never really talk about doing that. It's his third best pitch or whatever. How much of it is feel? It depends on, you know, the semantics of it, but I would say it's 100% feel. It's just based on this mountain of information we get about the hitter. So we get all this information. We know that this guy, you're better off throwing him sliders instead of curveballs if you happen to have both breaking balls with this guy's arsenal. So, okay, I know I'm going to probably throw him more sliders than breaking balls. I know that he hits the fastball down better than he handles the one up in the zone. So I have all this information, but then I get in the bullpen and we don't have that, or it's not as crisp, or hey, the guy has a really good changeup today. And so when you're kind of in the battle of it, your instincts will take over and you're going to be wrong a lot. I think the good catchers in terms of game calling, they're not afraid to make mistakes. They don't want to just do the chalk answer for every single pitch that they call. And I think the pitcher has a lot to do with it too. The pitcher, I encourage guys to shake all the time because I want that guy to throw something he's convicted in that might be slightly incorrect, as opposed to just kind of doing what I say and not really believing in it.
Yeah, you better throw it with conviction. You better believe in it. So let me ask you this about shaking off. With the pitch clock being as it is, I mean, PitchCom helps, I know. Is it tougher to shake off maybe twice? There are certain times where maybe he's taken a minute to go to the rosin or whatever, where the clock's running down, where, okay, I can't shake. I've got to throw the ball.
It's happening more and more, especially the 2 seconds doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a big difference.
Yeah.
We've noticed it already this year. And you have the pitch comm, which is helpful, but it's funny. You know, we talked about it in spring training. Like we wanted, instead of it saying four seam fastball down and away, as opposed to fastball away. And if you happen to get a shake on the first one that I said, you've lost a second, maybe two.
Yeah.
And then you multiply that by, well, am I looking into JR for running game signs? So we already started at 10 when I gave this first fastball, that four-seam fastball down and away. So,
right.
Like, it compounds, and so we've had some conversations about that. But, yes, I mean, to answer your question, the pitch clock is real. Not being able to go to the mound two less times since the rule was first introduced where it was six, now it's four. You have less and less margin for error. I think it's good for the game. I don't mind it, but there are times where it's like, man, do I wish I could just call time out and take a visit.
What do you do with a guy like Nick Martinez who has a boatload of pitches and he's got variations to pitches with the pitch comp? Do you have to add a button in? Or is there like a double button? How does it work?
Well, we've got all the pitches covered. He is a challenge. I mean, we're still getting used to it, and a good challenge. I mean, he's got, I'm not sure if I could count them all, but let's just say it's seven really quality pitches. It's not like, I have four and I kind of have three other ones. Like, no, everything he throws with really plus command and conviction.
He's filthy.
He's really.
When he's on, wow.
Yeah. And you kind of, as a catcher, it's like you can be so creative with it, but, you know, if your paintbrush doesn't match what he's kind of picturing, you're going to have some conversations in the dugout between innings about, you know, maybe we're prepping for this hitter. Like, hey, I'm thinking this, followed by this, followed by this, just to help me out or Steve-O out. I love those conversations. I mean, by no means do I want to just give up the authority to call pitches, but when guys who have been around have an idea of what they want to do, it helps me tremendously.
Yeah. I want to go back to spring training. You guys have catchers meetings all the time. And by the way, I'm going to say it again. Catchers should get paid double in spring training because it's cray-cray the amount of work that you guys have to put in. Seriously, you should get paid. Whatever it is, pay you double during spring. Just add that on. But you guys have catchers meetings all the time, if not every day, every morning. And you brought pitchers in individually this year to – I don't want to speak for you, but I'm assuming this is what makes me most comfortable. This is what I need from you guys. How much did that help?
it helps, I think, like the X's and O's of it. It does help, but it's probably not as tangible as people would think because of the adjustments that happen in-game that I mentioned before. It gives you a nice foundation. I think the biggest thing is that the pitchers come in and they feel our energy. They notice that we're paying attention to them, and that makes them feel good. It makes them feel like we care, which we do. But I think that the season is so long and monotonous, it's important first and foremost to almost remind them, that's probably not the right word, but for lack of a better one, to remind them that, hey, we're paying attention, we care, and we are trying to have each and every one of you in the Cy Young race this year or whatever. I think that's the big takeaway for me, and we've done them in the past where they haven't been there, and they were still fine. We probably got as much out of it in terms of sequencing and the X's and O's stuff that I mentioned, but having them there and again, them just feeling the energy and the passion we have for them getting people out, I think helps.
J.R. House is one of my dudes. I love that guy. I'm assuming you feed off of his energy as catchers. And one thing that he does yearly is you guys come up with a motto. It's kind of a motto for the year. And you have T-shirts that are involved. By the way, he unsolicited gave me a T-shirt. It was one of the greatest gifts I've ever received. It was just a T-shirt. But I wouldn't wear it around the complex or anything. Not in front of you guys. I'm not worthy. But at home, I'm going to be wearing that.
You got a dress code when you come here, exactly. So we understand.
Yes. Well, no dress code. I'm just not wearing player stuff. Like at Reds Fest, they have broadcasters put on jerseys. I hate that. Not worthy. Shouldn't have a jersey on. Got off on a tangent there. Sorry. But the motto this year, I love. Can you take us through the motto and the T-shirt?
It's the battery. So, the T-shirt is it references, you know, being charged up, right? Where there's a battery works, obviously a negative and a positive and all that. I was never good at science, but you guys get the idea. You can fill in the blanks. The battery is used as a baseball term and has for over 100 years. And there's a reason for that. It has to work together. It has to be in unison and flow and all of that. Now, in years past, they've used different, you know, kind of gone a different route with it. But I thought that especially after the year we had last year where we used so many pitchers and we had to learn so quickly in games that really mattered, obviously, and it was a lot of guys making debuts, like we had to have that battery operate immediately. And so I think that was probably, I don't want to speak for him, but I would imagine that's one of the things that kind of resonated with JR, and I agree with it. We're all grown men here, and we kind of know what our job is anyway, but those little reminders, and the shirt's cool too. I mean,
it's got a state of Ohio on the front.
That's right. Yeah, it has the state of Ohio on the front. It's cool. It makes you appreciate and remind yourself that not only are you a part of the team at large, the Reds, but you're in charge of a lot of guys' livelihoods, or at least part of it.
Yeah, no doubt. I had JR, I didn't interview him about it, but he gave me some quotes of what was behind it. And for the life of me, of course, I'm calling this up late. Let's see if I can call this up here, Luke. Probably not. But anyways, it was here we go. It represents the synergy between pitcher and catcher and gives credence to the Reds as an organization caring about the human aspect of a catcher and what a catcher needs. The T-shirt has FAH on the sleeve, Fearlessly Attack Hitters. There's also another version of that. And Dream Catcher, which is the catcher's motto. They now bring the pitchers into the catcher's meetings collectively and individually so that what they need is expressed, which creates better synergy. So the synergy between pitcher and catcher, the battery. I love it because we all need reminders. We all need reminders all the time. Our human brain, our attention span is like 20 seconds now as a society. So I dig it.
Yeah, I do too. And I think it's going to help us. I think it's going to help the catchers. It's a good reminder, as you mentioned, and it's going to help our pitchers know and come to that relationship that we want so bad. And I think it puts it in, kind of fast forwards everything for us.
Yeah. How has framing evolved over the years for you? Because it is, It seems to change yearly. First, when framing first came out and they started to come up with the analytics, I'm like, eh, okay, all right. And now it is so crucial. And I want to ask you about this new thing that I'm seeing. I'm seeing you guys now, you'll give a target, and then you'll put your glove down near the dirt. And so you're always catching the ball up now, which I haven't seen. I mean, you've seen frame jobs trying to go up with a low pitch, but to start at the dirt and come up, is that fairly new?
Fairly. It started kind of happening about halfway through my career, maybe a little earlier, but it became really popular the last few years.
Yeah. That's what I mean by new, last 2 years. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to go back to what you said about how it's changed throughout my career, I mean, that's an understatement. I mean, I was told that you were supposed to be as soft as possible, right, and look, you know, almost like you're in a rocking chair back there. Yeah. And it has evolved to where there's at least a lot of data, maybe not all of it, suggests that if you can rip a ball back into the strike zone, you're going to get more strikes. The best receivers in the league, especially at the bottom of the zone, tend to do that. I've had to make a lot of adjustments. I've been apprehensive, I guess would be the right word, to do that, because I felt, number one, I mean, I came up catching a certain way, yeah, and it was a lot different than this. What I've gotten to now is more of a hybrid, where I don't really want to sacrifice being able to block. I certainly don't want to sacrifice that. I don't want to sacrifice being able to throw. But I have holes in my game, and some of them revolve around receiving, especially the last couple of years. So I've gone to a knee. I've tried to lower my glove. I've tried to catch the bottom of the ball more often, be a little bit more violent, I guess, catching the ball. And it's funny because, you know, what it feels like when I started doing it, I mean, it felt like I was going to get ejected. I think I even told JR that. He's like, how's it feel? I'm like, I feel like the guy behind the plate's going to eject me. That's how ridiculous this feels.
Yeah.
And then I go and look at it, and it's like, dude, you didn't even really do anything different.
Yeah.
You know, you still look like yourself. So that's kind of when it hit me, like, you know what? I need to give this a shot, because I was woefully bad at the bottom of the zone last year. And a little bit of that, I think, is bad luck. Maybe there's some, we have some guys that throw up in the zone a lot. Yeah. So you're always going to get docked more often when you're giving a high target and somebody like Hunter throws it right at the bottom of the zone, because it kind of looks like you're slam dunking the ball because it's just too hard. You don't have time to reroute your glove to get underneath it. So what we try to do is exaggerate. We give you the target, we show you where we want it, and then we kind of lower ourselves to make sure we can cover the bottom, because that's the toughest one to get.
I can't imagine how tough it is, because like you said, you came up catching a different way and you're having to change on the fly. And oh, by the way, the ball's moving 95 plus, or moving left to right or vertically or both. And this is a split second thing, and you've got to worry about blocking the play. You got to worry about the pitch, the pitcher. You got to worry about base run. I mean, it's... So it better come naturally. So I imagine it's hard to get to that point. So again, you guys have the toughest job on the field.
Just to add to that, I mean, one thing for me, being a guy who's later on in a career, I don't want to be the guy that's stuck in his ways. You know, I think
that you can't be. The game will leave you behind.
Exactly. I've seen it a lot of times. There's a lot of stubborn people that ended up being stubbornly out of work the next year.
Yes.
You know, and I'm not saying that it's all right or all wrong, but I've always admired, like, just, you know, even companies, like, people have done things a certain way for forever, and they say, you know what, like, we, even though this is our foundation, like, we need to at least make a partial change, or, you know what I mean? And I think that as a player, I've always believed in what I do, and I thought it's the best way, because that's why I had been doing it for so long the way that I did. But I don't want to be a guy that is just stuck in his ways, and then, as you said, the game just passes you by.
I want to talk about individual pitchers, if you don't mind, and we're going to do that with Luke Maley after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, let's talk some individual pitchers here. I wanted to do something, and if you don't want to do this, then
just I'll let you
just poo-poo it. I want to just throw out a pitcher's name, and I want you to just give me the first thing that comes to mind, pitching and maybe even as a person, or both, neither, whatever. Just whatever comes to mind, particularly about pitching. You know, maybe something will come to your mind about the guy, the dude, whatever. Frankie Montas.
Just an awesome competitor. First thing that comes to mind is one of his first live batting practices back in spring training. And I forget the hitters he was facing, but they were our guys, and they were major league guys. And you would have thought that it was Game 7 of the World Series when this guy was out there.
Really?
He wanted to beat every single one of them so bad. And he's not, like, really a trash talker or anything like that, but you could just sense that there was – he had a sense of pride about what he was going to do that day. And I just remember thinking, man, if this guy's acting like this here on February the 15th or whatever it is, I wonder what it's going to look like on opening day. So just an awesome competitor. Really good fastball. He's got two fastballs, kind of a running, sinking fastball, and then he's got a four-seam that he throws at the top. And he is not afraid to use them. And it's refreshing because you can always rely on him to challenge a hitter.
I went to him and I said, you know, we want to get your name pronunciation right because it's been Montas forever, but it's actually Montas. And he's like, if I'm on the mound and I'm healthy, I don't give a F what you call me. I'm like,
that sounds like him.
First, I love that. But it's also your name, so we want to get it right. So that's why I say Frankie Montas. If you hear Montas and you think we're pronouncing incorrectly, it's actually the correct pronunciation of his name. All right, Hunter Green.
Obviously just a huge fastball. His slider is a pitch that when it's right, virtually unhittable because if his slider is working, that means that he has pretty good command. Let me back up. If his slider is working, that means that his release point has to be good. If his release point is good, then if he's throwing a straight ball, which just happens to be 102 miles an hour or whatever it is, he's going to be able to put it where he wants more often. So to me, like when I think of Hunter, it's like, man, when that slider is on, you're just going to have a lot of fun with that guy that day. I think that he's pitching in Great American has probably hurt him early on just because he's given up fly balls that are sort of hit hard, sort of loud, and they end up going 6-7 rows back, right? And so I think that, like, his fastball gets knocked. Like, oh, is it really that it is. It is that explosive. I think he's given up a lot of cheap homers. The other thing with him is he's so young. Like, he's one of the leaders of our team. He's such a big clubhouse presence for us. And you forget that this guy has not had a lot of professional innings under his belt. In a lot of ways, he's still developing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so not that you grade on a curve in the big leagues, but as a catcher, as somebody that's caught him a lot, you have to remind yourself, like, you know, he probably shook to that pitch just out of inexperience or just out of maybe overthinking a little bit, like normal stuff. But, like, if you don't remind yourself that he's still a young guy, It might confuse you, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, the sky is the limit on Hunter Green. His stuff is just name one of the dominant strikeout pitchers in the game, and his name's right there.
Graham Ashcraft.
I mean,
tough to catch, I imagine.
That's the first thing that comes to mind. It's not exactly a lot of fun to catch, and like this is probably sort of a window into his personality. He loves that. Like, he loves that nobody wants to catch him.
Absolutely his personality.
Absolutely. So he knows it's nasty. He knows that he's got no idea which way it's going to move most of the time, and he likes it. And you know what? That's what makes him good.
Yeah.
Same type of thing. It's kind of a two-pitch guy. It's a fastball that cuts and has downward angle. It's kind of interesting because in the game today, if you throw – you know, over 95, let's say, most of the time, your fastball is going to work better up in the zone. You're going to be trying to get the barrel underneath the ball, or the ball you know, over top of the barrel. But with him, it when he's throwing it right, it's almost like a 98, 99 mile an hour slider from a right-hander.
Yeah.
And so, like, if he hits down and away and it's 98, but he also has the ability to throw it chest high, just kind of in the middle of the plate, it's just, it's really difficult for hitters to cover both of them. You know, I mean, another thing that comes to mind is he just, I don't think that I've met somebody who just loves to get people out more than him. And the bigger the name, the better.
Oh, absolutely.
If you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Well, first interview we ever did, we asked him about facing Soto, Juan Soto, and the challenge of that. And he's like, well, he hasn't seen my stuff yet.
Yep.
Like, yep. I'm looking forward to it. He didn't see my stuff.
That's a great way to think, man. Like, if there's any kids out there, it is always the right way to think. You don't even have to be right. And then the guy might get you. It's the big leagues. But, you know, he's not shying away from anybody.
Oh, I love back in spring training where the live sessions and he's breaking bats and he's laughing at the hitter. The hitter's ticked off because, you know, you don't want to break a bat. And he is laughing at them walking off the
mat. He loves it. He loves it.
That's beautiful.
I know.
Andrew Abbott.
My guy, Andrew Abbott.
Yeah.
He came on last year and was so valuable for us. I mean, he's, you know, nobody's single-handedly responsible, but we were in a tight spot last year with pitching. And he comes up, he started in Double A, and another guy that just doesn't have a ton of professional innings under his belt. I mean, he went to college and all that, but I mean, he just dominated the league the first, I don't know, whatever, 2 months he was up or whatever, and really easy going. Has competitive fire, no question. But he is a guy that just he's always the same guy. He is never bothered by the moment. He pitched in so many big games last year. A lot of them went great for him, and he was level headed. And a lot of them, I mean, they hit him all over the yard, and he was the same guy too. I can't tell you how valuable that is, because if you're going to play in the league for 10, 12, 15 years, like he hopefully will, and I think he will, that's a really good way of going about it.
Nick Martinez.
So, I mean, his journey is really, really unique, right? Him pitching overseas and everything, starting out over here. So he's a guy, and we've talked about it before, but, I mean, the amount of pitches he has is ridiculous. You know, sometimes you roll your eyes when a pitcher comes in and tells you they have seven different pitches, but you catch one bullpen of his and you go, no, this is the real deal. Like, he can throw it wherever he wants. I mean, he's particular in a good way about where he wants to land a breaking ball. Like a lot of our guys, it's like you call a slider, and you just kind of set up middle and you let it play. He's able to take his curveball, for example, and throw it on, I mean, not just sides of the plate, but like thirds or quarters of the plate when it's really going well.
12 to 6 curveball, right? It's very unique nowadays.
Yes. I mean, it comes out of a helicopter. It is just wicked. It's a great pitch. And then he's got a change up, the same type of thing. Like,
is that a hybrid, a split change, or is it straight?
Yeah, I mean, it behaves like, it looks like the hardest fastball you've ever seen coming out of his hand, because it just spins so much and it has four-seam spin. So if you can picture when somebody throws a four-seam fastball, the ball is like white, if that makes sense, because the seams are kind of on the outside. If they throw a two-seam fastball, the ball's got a little bit of a red shade to it because the seams are kind of staring at you. And same thing with the changeup. So I've always believed that if you throw a four-seam fastball, you should throw kind of a four-seam changeup. You want it to look the same.
Yeah.
Now, he's got two different fastballs, but the changeup that he throws looks a hell of a lot like his four-seam fastball. And on top, so you could stop there, and it would be a great pitch. But on top of it, he's able to make it fade. He's able to throw it middle down. He can throw it away to a right-hander, kind of on his glove side. It's really special.
Yeah, people ask me, all right, who's the guy that no one talks about much that's really going to take off this year? And he's the first guy that comes to mind. I just think, even though he's up an age a little bit, his career path, I just think the stars have aligned and he is ready to take off as a starting pitcher. People say it's bullpen. Sorry. I'm like, starting pitcher. He's ready to take off. So,
yeah, I agree. And we're really lucky to have him. Yeah. Honestly, God. I mean, we are really lucky to have him, because not only is his arsenal sick, just all these guys, A++ through the word.
Every guy you added.
Everybody through the roof. personalities all the way around and teammates.
Yeah. Nick Lodolo, who I know he's getting a slow start to the season, but man, in spring training, it's maybe the best I've seen his stuff.
Yeah, it's filthy. I mean, you know, we've got a pretty good pitching staff, don't we?
Yeah.
I mean, Lodolo gives me kind of like Chris Sale vibes when Sale was really good. Yeah, just he's got the ability to kind of run that fastball in on a righty. He can pitch inside to lefties without drilling them, which sounds simple, but there's not a ton of left-handed pitchers that like to pitch on their arm side with their fastball.
Yeah.
He's a guy that can do both. And then the slider, I mean, there's not a ton of footage you can find from all the big leagues the last 10 years where a left-handed pitcher smokes a right-hander in the kneecap and they take a full swing on it. I mean, there's very few guys that can do that. He's a guy that will do that, it feels like, every other start. So,
has he shortened it? Is it?
You know,
it seems to be shorter and later breaking, but I
that's
just
later.
From the,
that's what I was going to say. I don't know exactly what the metrics are, but it feels late. It feels like when you're catching it,
which is great.
Yeah, like I'm the one that called it, and you're still pretty uncomfortable about whether this thing's going to break or not sometimes.
Yeah. All right. I don't want to go through every starter, and I'm not going to go through the whole bullpen here, but just a few guys. Particularly a new guy, Emilio Pagan. I don't know if you've caught him much, but he seems like a terrific addition to the bullpen.
Yeah, just like I was saying, start with the personality traits, just a super pro, gets it, works hard, doesn't say like a ton, but when he speaks, everybody just stops what they're doing. He's kind of that guy.
Yeah.
Great split finger, great fastball that he can dot down and away to a righty. He can throw up top, where his fastball really plays up, meaning it plays harder than it actually says on the radar gun. And then kind of like a cutter slider thing that when he's got that going, the few times I've had him, you can pretty much call that whenever you want, and it's going to be safe. He gets a lot of contact with it, but it's a lot of weak contact, which is great.
Alexis Diaz, obviously the talent is there. What is he? I mean, at the end of last season, everyone was out of gas last year. So I kind of throw out a little bit what happened at the end of the season. Next step for him, what does he have to do?
He just needs to keep being himself. I think anytime you have a guy pitching in high leverage, especially on a team that is hopefully a winning team, as we should be and were last year, you're going to pitch a lot. There's going to be a lot of close games. Staying healthy is number one. Like by a lot, you know, I can't tell you how many times we've had, I've been on teams with high leverage, big time closers, and it just doesn't seem to last. But he's a guy that, because of the whippiness of his arm, it feels like a guy that could do this for a really long time. I think he will. I mean, the next step, I mean, I don't know. I don't even really want to go there because he's been so good for us. And I think that the closer role, it's not even so much about, it's not about anything except handling the moment and getting guys out. And usually handling the moment leads to the second part, right? And he's top notch at that. He wants the ball. He wants the game as tight as possible every night. He's ready for it. He's not afraid of it. That's what comes to mind when we talk about him.
I get a smile on my face when I mention Brent Suter for many, many reasons. But talk about adding a good dude. What's been your impression?
So I had Brent when I was in Milwaukee for a short bit there in 21. And obviously he had a great start to his career there. There's really nobody like him personality-wise, I would say. He is
maybe such, Jim Carrey himself.
Yeah, I know. His impressions rival anybody I've ever been around.
Yeah.
Super funny. Obviously, I mean, he's a Harvard guy. He's very intelligent. He kind of knows, he has the right approach with like kind of handling all the knowledge that he can retain about hitters and also being himself. You know, like he knows what guys have done to him in the past. He remembers at bats. Well, a lot of guys do, but you know, he doesn't have the biggest fastball in the world, obviously. Like it's more funk. It's more, you know, he tricks guys a lot into weak contact, but he knows that that's that's how he's been successful, and he doesn't shy away from that, which I think is great. As a catcher, it makes our job easier because we're kind of all on the same page in what we're trying to do, and we're not trying to be someone we're not.
Yeah. Well, as someone that has to watch every game, he works fast and throws strikes. Love him.
No doubt.
One last question on the pitchers. A lot of young talent in this organization. I mean, the talent level over the last 5 years has been incredible. How has it has ascended? Who are guys that you caught or watched or whatever that comes to your mind that, like, okay, wow, this is really good stuff?
I mean, too many to name.
That's a good thing.
Yeah,
that's a good thing.
Too many to name. We've got a lot of guys with big-time fastballs. I mean, Phillips comes to mind, I guess. He helped us out quite a bit last year. Just a big fastball, not afraid. Like, I keep on going back to that, right? Like, it's not even about specific pitches or even, you know, which guy's going to project to be a starter or he's going to project to be in the bullpen. It's got nothing to do with that because that all eventually it works itself out. The biggest takeaway I have with our young guys is that they were put into a lot of big moments last year and handled them overall really, really well. And the times where we fell short or they fell short individually, they're able to process it and learn quickly on, like, what went wrong. Was it a pitch sequence thing, or was it, you know, a preparation thing, or were you nervous? Like, you know, kind of uncomfortable questions to ask yourself, but they do a really good job of it. That, I think, you know, that's my main takeaway with our young guys, is that they're really receptive to asking themselves the right questions and challenging themselves to be true major leaguers that with traits that will last a long career.
Love it. Do you have just a couple more minutes? Are you?
Of course. For you. Of course.
Look, thank you very much. Because I want to ask you about wearing that Cincinnati on the front. We'll do that after this.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Last year, had you on the podcast, and a lot of the interviews we did were like, hey, what's it going to be like? What was it like signing? What was the family's reaction? But now that you've been through a year of being a Cincinnati Red, wearing that Cincinnati on the front, you touched on it a little bit. I know what it means to be in this city. What was it like that first year?
It was a great first year, and I'm glad there's a second one, and I hope there's a third. And beyond. But it's still, in a lot of ways, doesn't feel real. Especially now that I've gotten a little bit more of an established role on the team, I would say, at least for now. Can always change. But
you're in there.
it feels, it's unbelievable. I mean, I think, look, we've got collectively just such an awesome opportunity because of the young talent that we have and the additions we've made, and we're in a win now kind of mode. And taking a step back and looking at it from when I first came in here 12 months ago, it's just a classic, you know, what a difference 12 months makes type situation.
Oh, the unbelievable, the turnover on the team. It went from, is this team going to lose 100 games again? To,
right.
This is a good team.
Packing the house in the middle of the summer last year and through the fall. That stuff is not lost on me. It's so cool, and I'm so proud to be a part of it. But there's still, and this is the exciting part, there's still work to do. You know, like it's still going on. And so for me personally, you balance just how cool it is to be playing in for a team that I always grew up loving and watching, but at the same time, like, all right, now there's a big responsibility here because you care even more. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. And the way that I handle that is like I handle anything else. It's just controlling controllables and head down, laser focus on the next task, on to the next one. All that stuff we talk about that sounds so boring, but it's true because it's what keeps you sane in the game of baseball.
Has to be so special for your family. What was it like for them this year? Because they're traveling just up the road to see you. They're not getting on a plane. They're not going on a long car ride.
Yeah, I'm free babysitting all year too for me and my wife. That's you can't beat that. But for them, no, they're over the moon, and they have been the entire time. But I can guarantee you they're more excited because we're projected or should win some games as opposed to just being on some sort of little home tour where we get our butts kicked all the time. Like they want the Reds to win more than
I love it. The Manley family is collectively competitive.
We are invested. We are invested collectively in Reds baseball. So that part's cool.
Update the listeners on your fam. You said free babysitting. How's the fam?
They're great. I'm sporting the girl dad. I got three girls now. We had our third.
Three of them now.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got a five-year-old, a three-year-old, and then about a two-month-old. So we're growing. Girls are great, man. They're kind of getting old enough to put together that daddy's playing for the Cincinnati Reds.
Really?
And it also happens to be right next to grandma and grandpa's house And then my oldest, who has been all over the country for the first few years of her life with me on different teams, I think she's like, wow, this one, I like this one the best, I think. You know, I get to see my cousins and all that. So
nice.
Everybody's in a good spot.
That is awesome. So you're a proud girl dad.
Oh, very much so. Keep them coming, man. They're great.
Wow. Do you plan on having more? Or are we?
Well, let's see how three goes.
Yeah, we're on two. But what's it? I mean, two-month-old. I mean, as much as time you have to put in spring training. Were they out in Arizona or
no? It was a little too close to the birth, and so my wife's family was able to offer, and God bless them. I mean, they came down to where we live in Florida for the winters. They were hanging out there with my wife and helping out, and you know, I mean, my wife's amazing. She can do so much with not a lot of time. But she got a little bit of a break with her parents there, which was awesome.
That is great. I'm so glad to hear that, my man. I'm so glad to hear
that. Thank you.
The fam's good, and you get a smile on your face. I can see the pride in your face and your eyes and the way you talk. It's just there's nothing better than that. So I'm so happy for you. Last thing. You I don't know how deeply you want to take us in, or if you do at all. I understand what happens in clubhouses or on buses or mainly, you know, a player's thing, sort of what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas type of thing. But you're always on the mic on the bus. You're always leading in spring training. You have the Reds Got Talent where the young guys have to get up and do certain things. So is there anything that stands out from last year that you could or would talk about that is humorous, just to take the listeners, the Reds fans, inside the clubhouse, if you will?
Who told you I was the bus guy? I got to have a conversation with him.
I hear things.
Yeah, I know you do.
I mean the bus guy. Let's explain it. The bus driver has an intercom system, and Luke will. The players ride on a separate bus. There's no staff. There's no coaches. It's just players when we go on the road, which is the way it should be, because I wouldn't want to be on that bus.
No, you wouldn't.
I would get killed. I already get murdered with verbal abuse, but I would get killed on that bus. But you get on the mic and we'll just lead things. I mean, which is great. You need that. You need some entertainment. You need some light moments. It's such a long grind of a season. So
it is. I mean, just to provide some context, it's not just a me thing. The bus mic. So the way it works typically is when you fly into a city on the road, you get off the airplane, and then there's three buses, coaches, staff, and then the players' bus. And so for a long time, at least as long as I've been in the league, normally a veteran guy will sort of lead the bus microphone and be humorous or talk about the series. Sometimes it's serious. I mean, sometimes we're just talking baseball.
Yeah.
But when I first came up, rookies would just get abused. And I mean, I've got some scars from.
I bet you do.
Yeah, from the Logan Morrison.
It's changed a little. It's changed a little bit in that regard.
It has changed. So my take on it is that while I will, you know, wear some guys out from time to time if it is appropriate and needs to be said, because I don't have much of a filter. My family will tell you that, and so will my teammates. I try, my biggest takeaway is I try and inspire them to be welcomed into our clubhouse.
It's not really hazing. It's more of inclusive. You're part of the family.
Call it baptism by fire.
There you go.
Yeah. So that's what my takeaway was, that it went well. At least I thought it went well. There was
Oh, no. I got good feedback.
I'm glad to hear that.
Great feedback.
There was some good, there was some really good, funny moments. And there were a lot of moments where, you know, we just talked baseball and we complimented performances that maybe weren't getting rewarded by the media or on the field. And you just bring them to people's attention. You have a good time. And before you know it, you're at the hotel and you go grab something to eat with some guys.
Correct me if I'm wrong. It seems like Andrew Abbott was a guy that, like, all right, whatever. You want me to sing? I'll sing. Just steps right in, like, whatever.
And that's the type of energy that we're going for here in Reds country. We want that energy. We want the young guys to be ready to go. But I do think there's an art to it. If you are on the microphone or you are a veteran guy, there's an art to hazing them. Or, well, let me say it, not hazing them, but also inspiring them to do something that's going to bring our team closer. And that's what it's all about, right? Like, it gets a bad rap sometimes, but it's in good fun and it's helpful.
Yeah. Well, he sang on the plane, Andrew. I don't even, it was a country song. He just, all of a sudden, I don't even think you guys coaxed him into doing it. It might have been when we were on the tarmac for like 8 hours.
Oh, I remember that.
And that's no lie. The 8 hours is not an exaggeration. It might have even been more.
And due to, flight regulations, they wouldn't let us off the airplane. Exactly. So we just sat there.
So a few guys got on the mic plane. And he had a little country number on there and just rolled with it, which is, I think, just beautiful. It speaks to the culture of the team. I mean, you guys got a good thing going, right? I use the word vibe a lot in spring training. Is that the vibe is good, right?
I think it is. I've been on a lot of teams. I don't really remember it being, I don't remember ever being on a team where it was so cohesive.
Really?
You just, yeah.
And that doesn't lead to victories necessarily, but it doesn't hurt.
No. You got to show up for work with these guys every single day for, including spring training, 8 months. If you're in the playoffs, 9. It might as well be an enjoyable place to go, you know?
And you're rooting for each other, too.
We are,
and it's genuinely rooting for each other.
We care about each other. I mean, especially these young guys that have come up together and they've got to enjoy the success of the major leagues, which there is no drug on earth that you could ever find that's going to give you the high of being a successful major leaguer, especially as a young player. And these guys that have been able to grow together all the way from back in their minor league days or when they were first drafted, it's really special to see, and I think it's permeated through the rest of us.
That is a good way to end it. Luke, as always, your insight is tremendous. I love talking baseball with you, and I'm, some catchers might not want to, talk about every pitcher openly because it's like, hey, can we talk about me a little bit? But you are... You are open to that, and I think it's the listeners and the Reds fans enjoy it. That was tremendous insight. Thank you very much. I wish you nothing but the best. You're one of my dudes.
Well, I appreciate that. No problem, and I'm happy to do it anytime.
You heard it, folks. The magic words, anytime, which means we'll be calling on Luke Maley once again. Appreciate it, Luke, going forward. And thank you out there for listening here on the Jim Day Podcast.
Baseball present, baseball past. Gonna share a few stories, gonna have